So we're going to continue in our series tonight, looking at this dude named Matthew, who was an apostle, a disciple of Jesus. And last week we looked at how Matthew was called by Jesus, but he was a person that you would not expect Jesus, the Son of God, the perfect Lamb, that Jesus, to call a guy like Matthew. Matthew was a dude who was a tax collector, who at the time was basically a traitor to his own people. He would just steal money and take extra taxes. And these people looked at him, his own people, the Jewish people looked at Matthew, and they could not stand him. They talked behind his back. Nobody wanted to be friends with him or even seen with him. Like, people wouldn't go to his house to eat. No one wanted to associate with this guy because he was seen as this traitor, not just to them, to his neighbors, but to his people, to God himself, because he's basically like trading away the birthright of the people of God. And they were like, listen, we don't want to be around this guy. So Matthew's over here and he's trying to like, hey, let me like get in with the Romans. I'm a tax collector. I'll work for Rome. I'll meet some really important people and then I'll make a lot of money. And like, he's going that route. But the Romans looked at him and they're like, dude, you're a Jew and we are Romans and you're not even a citizen of Rome. Like, you're some lesser class of a person. We don't want to be around you either. And so Matthew finds himself just stuck. He's in between two countries. He has no country or no people because nobody wants to be around Matthew. He's hated basically by everyone. And then all of a sudden, this guy named Jesus walks by as he's sitting there at his booth and he's like literally stealing money from people, from his own people. And Jesus walks by in the middle of his sin and all of what he was doing. And Jesus is like, hey, you. And Matthew's like, what? Me? And now he recognized who Jesus was. He knew this guy. He had heard the stories about what Jesus had done. He wasn't surprised, but he was shocked. He was shocked that Jesus would even look at him. Because he's like, I know I'm unlikely. Like, why would you even talk to me? And here's this Jesus going, you, I want you to get up and follow me right now. That's wild that Jesus would call a person like that. And most Christians today probably wouldn't approve of Jesus' decision because the Pharisees we read, they didn't approve. They were like, Jesus, what are you doing? Like, they went to his house. They had this party. They invited others that were also tax collectors and sinners, and they're all sitting in Matthew's living room. And the Pharisees are outside like, what is Jesus doing? Why would Jesus ever do that? Who does he think he is? He's supposed to be this great dude, this really religious, spiritual leader, and he's eating with like the worst of the worst. And so they obviously don't approve of Matthew either. And we saw last week, like no one did. Like Matthew himself didn't even approve of himself. Like, why would Jesus call this guy? But we see something really awesome. We see that it was absolutely unmistakable that he really was called. That Jesus really had a good reason for calling him. It had nothing to do with his behavior or like who he was or his social status. It had nothing to do with any of that. He wasn't even a great person. Like, it wasn't that he just impressed Jesus and Jesus was like, man, I need you on my team. Let's go join our team. We're going to build a church. It's going to be awesome. That's not how it went down. But Jesus did look at him and saw that he was unworthy and saw that he was unlikely and that he was broken and full of sin. And yet, Jesus still picked this guy. He still looks at him and is like, hey, get up and follow me. Come join me. I can't read Jesus' mind. I don't know his reasons, but I know that Jesus knew what he was doing because he's God. And he didn't pick Matthew based on how likely of a candidate he was. He picked him because he knew who he wanted. And Jesus knows best. And he looked at Matthew and saw what he could transform him to be. And so we stopped a little last week and we looked at ourselves, right? And we were like, man, I feel unlikely. I don't think God should call me or care about me, but he does. And it's not because I'm trying to please God or making him proud of me. It's because God knows what he can transform me into being. He knows how powerful he is, right? We already know how broken I am. The thing we need to learn is how powerful our God is. Because he can take you and transform you and make you into something you never, ever dreamed could happen if you trust him, just like Matthew. And so sometimes we're looking for these huge miracles, right? We're like, Jesus can turn water into wine and like walk on the water and like do all these incredible things, raise dead people back to life. Jesus does unbelievable miracles. Yes, he does. But you know the greatest miracle that Jesus has ever done and ever will do It's transforming dead people and their dead souls into his children. When he takes us as dead as we are in our sin and is able to free us from that and give us life when we were walking dead, that is the most powerful miracle we will ever witness. That's what Jesus does. That's what he did in Matthew. And so this week we're looking at the same passage we read last week, but we're looking at something new in it tonight, another piece that we didn't get a chance to look at last week. And it's not just that he was an unlikely candidate and that it had to do with God's power and not his. But this week we're going to see something else. We're going to see that it was undeniable that he was called by Jesus, that this thing was real. You see, a lot of times we do this thing. We do this thing where we're like, man, I want to be a Christian. I want to be known as a Christian. I want to identify that way. A lot of times, even living in Florida or in the South, we live in this culture, right, where we're surrounded by people who are like things like Republicans or conservatives. Christians get stuck in that list and all these different things, right, that we tend to be and we fit in. And we're like, man, I'm a Christian because everyone around me is a Christian. My culture is a Christian. I go to a church with my family and my parents. Like, everyone calls himself a Christian. But very, very few actually live it out. So many Christians. And if I were to look at your social media tonight, what would I find on it? A lot of times this is what I see, right? I see like, I love Jesus. Everybody should worship Jesus. Come to youth group tonight. And the next thing's like cuss words and swear words and like all this junk and trash and filth. And then the next one's like, man, I hope everybody's having a good time with Jesus tonight. And then it's like this one after another of like Jesus world, Jesus world, Jesus world. And that's if we're lucky. How many of us want to claim it and want to fit in because our society says it, but we're not living like Christians. We don't look like Jesus in our real life because that's what a Christian is. By saying I'm a Christian, I'm saying I'm like Christ. That's what it means. And so he makes me like him, right? Matthew at first didn't look like Jesus at all. He was a traitor, a liar, a thief. He was horrible. And then Jesus takes him and flips his life upside down. And all of a sudden, when you look at Matthew, you think of Jesus. Because the dude is willing to give his life for the gospel and to plant churches and to help people and to love people. He was a completely different person. And you know what? That's the change that's supposed to happen in us. Far too many of us think that this Christianity thing is some club we join to get some friends and it's cool and I feel good. And it's about us feeling good. I go to church so people will help me. I go to church so people, you know, my leader, when I'm sad, will like give me a hug and talk to me and cheer me up or whatever the thing is. But it's usually about us. And God calls us to church to say, here I am, come worship me. Have you come to give? Have you come to give worship to the one who's worthy of it? To let him change your life and make you look like Jesus. That's what a Christian is. Jesus is transforming you to look like him. And so Matthew, as we look at his life, it's undeniable. This change from this dude who is so unlikely, wow, it's this transformation that only Jesus could have done. So we know that this was a real calling. Read this with me real quick. Verse 9 says, as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him. Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came, ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? On hearing this, listen to Jesus' response. Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners. In Matthew's response to Jesus here in this passage, there's four reasons I want to give you tonight. I want to point out four things that show us that his calling was absolutely genuine. Like, this dude meant it. He wasn't doing the fake church thing to look like a Christian and living like the world. His life changed. This was a real call and a real answer to Jesus. And as we talk through this for the next few minutes together, would you let a question roll around in your mind tonight? Is my faith genuine? Do I truly believe in Jesus? That question that would say, like, am I being transformed? Am I starting to look like Christ? Or have I not changed one bit? Would you just let that roll around in your heart as we talk through this tonight? Look with me again at verse 9. It says, Jesus went on from there. Look what happens. He saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. And listen to these words, just two. Follow me. That's it. That's all it was. This whole spiel, this whole thing that got Matthew to literally get up and leave wealth and fame and fortune and influence and really awesome, like powerful friends and all this stuff. He gets up, he leaves it behind, literally giving it up because of two words. And he follows Jesus. That's all it took, two words. Like, have you ever tried to convince somebody of something? Dude, it takes so many words, more than just two words usually, to convince a person if they ever get convinced of the thing you're trying to, like, sway them to, right? Like, Jesus only had to say two things to this dude. Follow me. That was it. That was the whole offer. His call was short and simple. That is awesome proof that this was real. This was something happening in Matthew's heart. Because he didn't need this big, long speech to convince him of all the pros and the cons and, like, all the good things and the benefits he would get and, like, what Jesus would do for him and what his future would be like. He didn't need Jesus to do all that. He didn't need to be kicked in the butt. He didn't need to be dragged. He didn't need any of that stuff. He was just like, two words, follow me. Okay, I'm up. I'm going. It was that short and that simple. Jesus called Matthew right where he was, right? In the middle of a sin, in the middle of, like, the worst of his life, the thing he was doing, literally robbing people in the moment, probably getting coins dropped into his hand as Jesus said the words, follow me. And he looks up as he grasps those coins that he's stealing from his neighbor. And he hears Jesus say, follow me, in the middle of him sinning. Hand in the cookie jar, right? Like, literally. What must that have felt like? You're the savior of the world who is about to die for you in the middle of your sin, call you and say, hey, let's go follow me. I accept you. I know the Jews hate you. I know the Romans hate you. I know everyone around here hates you. But when Jesus said, follow me, he was saying, I accept you. Nobody else did. But when Jesus looked at Matthew, he loved him. And Matthew knew it. I bet he looked down at that hand of gold or silver or whatever it was in his hand there and just thought, why would you ever accept me? It must not have taken much to drop the coins, to leave the entire life behind, to hear that. To know you would accept me, Jesus. And it says he simply got up and he followed because he knew that was the best offer he could ever be given. There was no better offer in the entire universe at any point of time. Jesus, literally the Son of God, calling him, accepting him, loving him. Why wouldn't he leave it all behind? In the middle of his work, right at his job, stealing. Listen, Jesus didn't even call him aside quietly to be like, hey, Matthew, let me talk to you for a minute. Let's discuss your life choices here. Let me give you this little motivational speech and get you all hyped up. It wasn't that. It was simple and plain and probably pretty boring. Other than that, they were the two most amazing words Matthew had ever heard his entire life and would ever hear again. Jesus Christ saying, follow me. You guys, some of us might be like, I have no clue what that would be like. But I bet there's a lot of us in the room who know exactly what that's like. Because at one point in your life, Jesus came to you and he said, hey, follow me. And you responded. You either said, holy cow, I'm leaving everything. Yes, let me follow you, Jesus, and you're following him now. You've asked him to forgive your sin. You've said, Jesus, I want to be yours. Wherever you lead, I'm going. You've done that, and you are currently following Jesus. Or you made a choice in that moment where he said, follow me, and you said, no, I'm not doing that today. And you went back to your life. You went back to your tax booth. But you made a choice. And every time Jesus comes to you and pursues you, and he's pretty persistent, but he doesn't do it forever. But as he comes up to you and he says, listen, are you going to follow me today? I'm calling you. Maybe every Wednesday night when you sit here, you hear the voice of Jesus. And he's whispering in your ear and he's like, hey, follow me tonight. Maybe you're here tonight and every week you've heard that, you've said no. You've gone back to that old life. Matthew didn't. Matthew saw how great that offer actually was. And it took him no time at all. It says immediately he gets up and he basically runs after Jesus to follow him. The fact that that was such a simple request, it didn't take much prodding any at all from Jesus to get him to say yes, man, that speaks volumes at how real this thing was. Do you need Jesus to come to you and just keep pushing you and pulling you and convincing you of how broken you are and how perfect he is and how much you need his love? Or if he were to come to you tonight, would you just clearly see, man, I don't need anything as much as I need Jesus? And maybe you're a Christian and you've been fighting that, right? Like you followed, but you keep walking away. You keep like doing your own thing. And Jesus has to keep grabbing you, pulling you back on the path, and you're fighting. But maybe you need to look up and be like, Jesus, you are the greatest. There's no better offer. There's no better person to walk with. Let me get back on path with you. Matthew did that. It was like this dead set, like nothing's stopping me. Like, it reminds me of these little girls I met once in, we did this Fright Night thing like a long, long billion years ago here for Halloween. And it was like, we set up in the building across the street. All these rooms were like super scary. It was like this this asylum, an insane asylum. And like, it was actually really, really scary. I wouldn't even go through it because it was like, it was wildly scary. But there was this one room I had to like stand in the corner and just be like the guard. And I got to see people come through and scream and get all scared. And it was like a dorm room. And there were like these little people walking around in like these like jackets, like straight jackets, all crazy and whatever. And it was like dark and like, ugh, it was weird. And these like older people came through that had brought these little girls who were on their own and trying to go through this thing. We're like, it's too scary for little girls. But they weren't that little, but they were kind of little. And they're like, we'll walk through with you, this sweet old couple. And so they're going through this crazy, scary house. They had no idea how scary it would be. And they get to this room, and I see this like couple, like old, like frail, old, like with these like young girls walking through. And once they get into this room, I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. This is not going to be good. And so the crazy people in the room, the actors who were acting like they were crazy, come up and start to like get in your face and like do weird stuff in your face and like the whole thing. And there's music going and just like, ah, like you just want to die. Like you don't want to be in there. And so these little girls, they couldn't take anything. Like they had no threshold for like fear at all. So immediately these girls like get freaked out. And so they turn and they start running. And I mean, there was nothing stopping them, except for the old couple that were right in the way of the door. And so like when they start running, they didn't care that there's these two frail elderly people who would break every bone in their body when they hit the ground. They just ran, dude. And there was a bed behind them. So all I see is three little girls who are kind of big, were just like start running, tackle this elderly couple onto a bed, over the bed. And then there's just like feet and legs and just this like massive like mound of like human parts all over the place. And they just book it and somehow make it all the way out of this thing. It was funny, okay? But I feel so bad for the old people. There was no stopping these girls, right? Have you ever had a moment in your life where you're like, there's no stopping me? Whether you're like super scared, but nothing is gonna stop you. Maybe you're super determined about a thing. This was Matthew. Like, there's no hesitation. There's no obstacle. There's no challenge. There's nothing that's going to stop me. I would tackle the people between me and Jesus. I would do whatever it takes. This was Matthew right here. Tell me why that seems so different from how so many people today seem to follow Jesus. I don't feel like I see a lot of us that are like, man, there's nothing that's going to stand in the way of me and Jesus today. Nothing's getting in the way. He said, follow me, I'm going. I feel like more of us are more like, yeah, I mean, it's cool, Jesus. Hey, like, I'm glad you're here today. Hope you help me out today and help me pass that test. And then I'll see you tomorrow. Maybe. I might talk to you today. I might read the Bible. I don't know, but we'll get together soon, maybe. We might giggle at that, but y'all, like, that is like modern day Christianity. So weak. It's a pitiful excuse for having a relationship with the Son of the living God of the universe. When you realize who it is that's saying, follow me, what in the world is going to stop you from doing that? What must we think of Jesus? How small do we think he really is that it doesn't make everything inside of us go, nothing will stop me from following you? Because I know who you are. That's Matthew. Unmistakable that this dude meant it. But that's only one thing. Look at this next piece. Look what happens next. Verses 9 and 10, right? So he sees Matthew, he says, follow me. And then while Jesus was having dinner in verse 10 at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. Here's a second reason why I know Matthew meant it, right? Jesus' call didn't promise all this like earthly success that Matthew's current position already had. He wasn't like, listen to all the awesome stuff. I'm going to promise you wealth. I'm going to promise you all these great things. As a matter of fact, Jesus' promise is that we're going to suffer because he suffered. Like, the Christian life is going to be hard. Jesus himself died on a cross. He was beaten and martyred. Like, why do we think that everything's just going to be great for us? It's going to be tough. People are going to hate that we're following Jesus. There's going to be persecution. But it's okay. Because it doesn't even compare to what we get in return, a relationship with the God of the universe, when we really know who he is. And see, Matthew had so much already. Like, he was super wealthy. This dude had all the things we've already mentioned 1,000 times. He was his. Jesus didn't try to trump that and be like, okay, listen, I have something better. I'm going to give you this, all right? That's pretty cool, but what if I did this for you and you had these perks and benefits? Jesus didn't do it. Just said, follow me. And yet, even though Matthew knew it would actually mean he would sacrifice the money and the friends and the influence and the power and all that stuff, he'd be literally giving it away, even though he knew he would lose that part of things, he still gets immediately up and follows Jesus. Like, how many of us would be willing to do that? How many of our relationships with Jesus look like Matthew's relationship with Jesus? And it's not just to compare and be like, oh, him and me. It's not about that. It's just to be like, how real is this thing? If that's what a real relationship with Christ looks like, do I have one? Am I just playing a game? Am I making my parents happy by saying I believe in Jesus, or my friends because they go to youth group and they invited me, or whatever the deal is? Maybe I just want to feel better, like I'm going to heaven, so I prayed this prayer, but I don't care about God or Jesus or any of that stuff. I just don't want to go to hell. That's not Matthew. See, a real relationship with Jesus says, I know who you are. I'll give everything else up to be able to be with you. That's worth it. Matthew did. He gets up. He leaves all this stuff behind. Like, the dude had the best spot too. His booth was in Capernaum and like had the best like spot in the biggest road. Like, all these people went by. He was making bank, like tons of money. And he was giving that up to go follow Jesus. I feel like Jesus maybe like All right, this is a little sacrilegious, right? But listen to me, just hear me out. Like, Jesus is probably a really bad job interviewer. You know, like, I don't feel like he did a good job on this job interview. Usually you sit down with people and you're like, hey, listen, this is what we can do for you and your job. This is why you should work here. Jesus didn't do any of that. It was kind of like the worst job interview ever. And it makes me think of this video real quick. You guys show this video?
How not to conduct a job interview. Recruiters have one of the highest rates of job burnout. If only they had released some steam now and then. You will need job applicants, an interview area with no privacy, and a total disregard for the interviewee's feelings. Step 1. Keep the applicant waiting in the reception area for no good reason, so he'll have added time to get nervous. Step 2. When you finally fetch him, come across as someone who hates his own job. Break the ice with, "Now, who are you again?" If you notice signs of nervousness, the applicant is sweating profusely, turning beet red, or stammering, be sure to point this out. Step 3. Begin by saying, "Let me tell you a little bit about myself," and launch into a monologue. Ask whether he thinks you'd look better as a redhead. Whatever he says, let your tone suggest he gave the wrong answer. Step 4. Repeatedly go off topic, lose your place, and do everything to convince the candidate that you are in desperate need of medication. Just to keep things interesting, repeatedly call him by the wrong name. If corrected, glare at him and say, "Isn't that what I just called you?" Step 5. Feel free to take personal phone calls. By pantomime, let the candidate know that the person on the other end is crazy. Then spend 5 minutes cooing, "No, I love you more," in a baby voice. Step 6. At this point, confess that there is no job per se, but you wanted to test the waters, as it were, by seeing how the response would be. Having said that, if there were a job, would he occasionally run personal errands for you? Step 7. Let him find his own way out of the office, even if said office is such a maze that he'll no doubt get hopelessly lost. If you run into him later, shout and threaten to call security. Did you know? According to one survey, 85% of people believe body piercings and tattoos impede a candidate's chance of getting the job.
Listen, I don't think Jesus was really like that. I don't think Jesus was actually a bad job interviewer at all. I think he was genius. I think he knew exactly what he needed to ask. And that's all he asked. He wasn't trying to sell benefits to Matthew or to any of us. He had already done that when he went to the cross and bought your eternal life and forgiveness of sins with his death. Jesus had already done it. So all he needed to do was say 2 words. And that's all he needs to say to us tonight. And I wonder how we would respond. Here's the third reason why I believe Matthew's answer. His response was genuine, because it says in verse 9, when Jesus says, "Follow me," it says Matthew got up and followed him. Do you see how immediate that was? Do you see the speed at which, like, there was no hesitation or thought? There was no, "Let me think this over, Jesus. I'll get back to you. I'll call you next week. Let me check my schedule, talk to my people, and then maybe I can follow you. Because right now, I gotta shut this booth down. I gotta lock things up in a safe. I gotta call my boss at the Roman, you know, consulate over here. I gotta talk to people, get a replacement." Nope. Drops the coins, stands up, starts walking. It's so immediate. His answer wasn't like this whole thing where he had to think it all over. Over and over, Jesus, as he's calling his disciples, he's finding them in different places. We're in the middle of life, right? He comes up to some of his disciples who are sitting in the boat because they're fishermen and they're mending their nets and their father's sitting there with them in the boat. And you know what happens? Jesus walks by. He's like, "Hey, you two, follow me." They drop their nets that they were mending that would feed their family. That's their livelihood and their job. Their own dad is still sitting there and like, "See you, pops." Like, they get up and they just leave their dad, like, just sewing nets. Like, "What? Where are you going?" And they take off and follow Jesus immediately. There's something to that, because every time Jesus calls people in the Bible, they recognize who he is. And they're like, "There's nowhere else I would rather be. I'm absolutely following you 100%. The response is so true and honest. It's like their heart just opens up and they're like, I'm not hiding anything. I'm just following you. Matthew literally just exposes his life to Jesus. And it's a hard question when you're asked to follow Jesus. And that means leaving everything behind. How do you answer that? See, today, a lot of times when we hear about the gospel or Jesus or being saved, we don't hear about that part. We only hear the part that's like, hey, don't you want to feel good and feel better and not go to hell? And we're like, yes, that's what I want. But we leave out this other part that's like, hey, don't you want to leave all of your broken life behind and get a brand new one? And so we think we can just take this old broken life with us into God's perfect presence. And he's like, it doesn't mix. We can't do that. Your brokenness and sin can't be in my presence. You've got to let it die so you can step into a new life. But we haven't heard that part of the message. So we get a lot of Christians walking around thinking, I'm just going to take my sin and carry it with me and then follow Jesus. And I'm going to sin and love Jesus and everything's going to be great. And God's like, no. You never even took the first step when I said, follow me. Leave that life. Drop the brokenness. But a lot of us, we're stuck in hesitation. Jesus is like, hey, follow me. And we're like, how do I answer this? We got one more video. I know I got a lot tonight, but I saw this one. I was like, that is how so many of us feel when Jesus calls us. Check this video out real quick.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Was Abe Lincoln honest?
Does this dress make my backside look big?
Perhaps.
Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I love that one. I love that one. Yes, your butt looks big. Yes, of course, it's big. It just is, right? Like, obviously. But did you hear the hesitation? Right? Look, it's funny when it's that, but it isn't funny, like, at all. When it's something serious. Like, when it's your very eternal life hanging in the balance, and you're asked this serious question, like, can you follow me or not? Are you willing to give that up or not? And we're stuck there hesitating, like, man, I just want to hold this old life. Every second that goes by, you know what we're expressing? We're saying, I just don't think you're that great. Jesus, I just don't think you compare to these things I'm holding tightly to. I don't think I can let them go because you're not good enough to make me want to release them to reach out to you. Matthew knew immediately how to respond to that question. Drops it all and follows Jesus. That's another reason. Finally, the last reason why I believe Matthew's response was genuine is look at this, verse 12 and 13. It says, on hearing this, Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners. You see, Jesus' call to Matthew was strong enough to heal a broken heart. A broken man who sat there with no friends, no allies, nobody to support him or love him or accept him. And in the middle of his brokenness is exactly when Jesus calls. And so the fact that Jesus' call is so strong, Jesus himself convinces me that Matthew's call was genuine. When the God of creation steps out and reaches out for your heart, you better believe that's a powerful thing happening. Tonight, maybe Jesus himself is reaching out to your heart. And he's asking you, and you're in that moment of like, am I going to say yes? Am I going to follow him? What am I going to do? What will I do tonight with this old life? How will I view Jesus? Is he really that incredible? Because the power of God will transform you. It will. It'll make you different, not just make you some hypocritical fake Christian. And then people go to church and go, man, church is so fake. It's because they're full of so many people that have never really followed Jesus. They're faking it. But there are believers that God has called, and they've looked back at Jesus and said, you know what? You got my whole life because you're worth it. You're worth more than anything and everything, and I'm following you, Jesus, and nothing is holding me back. Y'all, that's Matthew. Goes from this absolute terrible person to being transformed like this by Jesus. That doesn't mean he was perfect the next day. The dude still struggled. He still had ups and downs, but the whole time he's clinging to Jesus through it all. He's not just jumping back in the old life saying, forget it, this is so much better. He's like, there's nothing better than Jesus. And he's living a life of repentance and faith. And that's what Jesus is calling us to tonight. Would you guys close your heads, close your eyes and bow your heads for me? As the band comes up to lead us in some more worship, would you just pray and ask God that question? Are you calling me to follow you tonight? Is that your voice that I'm hearing saying, hey, leave it all behind, leave the brokenness and follow me? Maybe you're already saved and you're like, man, I follow Jesus, but maybe God is calling you tonight to get back on the path. Maybe saying, get back on here and walk with me. You've been straying and doing your own thing. Maybe tonight you'd pray and say, Jesus, will you just show me that you are the greatest thing in all of the universe? Like, there's nothing better than you. Just listen and see what he has to say to you tonight.